Hello and welcome to Take the Black, a podcast dedicated to all things fantasy and science fiction, and especially Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, and the world of Westeros, and right now, especially, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, the new Game of Thrones prequel that is airing right now. We break it down every week, and we've got a juicy one to talk about this week. I am Daniel Roman, the editor of winteriscoming.net. I'm so psyched to be joined, as always, by Mark Nettles of House of Nettles. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing awesome, and you can catch me at House Nettles and all those other cool platforms. I'm ready to dive into this episode and figure out, are there any true knights amongst us?
Yeah, isn't that the question, man? That, you know, we've known that line was coming. We knew they did it. Like, it's been in all the trailers, but I still got chills. I still got chills when that kicked in.
Yeah, it's like you're ready. Like, are there any true knights? Like, am I a true knight? You just want to stand up, like, yeah, don't pick me. Pick me.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So, you know, the episode, presuming that you, viewer, listener, are watching, listening to us earlier than usual, perhaps, because this episode, 7 is the title of this episode, the fourth one of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. It dropped early. It dropped at 3 a.m. Eastern, 12 Pacific on HBO Max because HBO didn't want to deal with the Super Bowl. So they're giving it to us is an early Super Bowl present, and then it will, of course, still air at the regular time, 10 p.m. on Super Bowl night, Super Bowl Sunday, but HBO doesn't expect you to watch it. That's why they're giving it to us now. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just not sure of the crossover that would have been so much that it would have affected the numbers coming out on Super Bowl day. Yes, would have been that dramatic of a draw. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, you kind of wonder, like, does HBO know something the rest of us don't about the overlap between the Super Bowl audience and the Game of Thrones audience? Is it a circle? I don't know, but someone at HBO must.
Well, I appreciate it, and I can't complain about getting some more Westeros just a little bit early.
Yeah, yeah. So why don't we dive right into this episode, episode 4. So this is... Where we left off with the last episode, Egg had just revealed his big secret to Dunk that he is, in fact, Aegon Targaryen, the youngest son of Maekar Targaryen. He dropped his secret to save Dunk's life because his older brother, Arian, was about to get Dunk curb stomped, yeah. Which is apparently a thing they do in Westeros.
Westeros history X.
Yeah. I saw an interview with Finn Bennett, who plays Arian, where he said, American History X was like his reference for that scene. It's like, all right, dude, Jesus.
he just went on a whim. He didn't even, and this wasn't even in the script. I was like, hey, this is what we're doing.
He's like, hey, get him down there on right to the stage. Yeah, thankfully, Dunk did not get curb stomped because Egg is a prince, so we know that now. So, Mark, this episode is kind of it sets the stage for what comes next. It deals with the fallout of Egg's big reveal and, you know, of the fact that Dunk punched a prince in the face and then kicked him in the face. Where do you want to start here?
I think a good starting point, of course, we have that awesome opening scene with Dunk and Egg speaking, mm-hmm. Him kind of really giving it to Egg. Like, even though Egg didn't technically say he was a stable boy, he never established that he wasn't a peasant, a young man from a lower house, or not even a house at all, just, hey, potentially an orphan, the way he made mm-hmm. it seem. So guilty, lying by omission is, I think, the crime that Egg is facing in this episode.
Yeah, and he did, there were a couple of things he lied about. Like, if I remember right, I think he told Dunk his dad died.
My mother died.
My mother, okay, so maybe he didn't lie then. But yeah, there he definitely danced around the truth in a not great way. And I really like this opening scene. I like that they didn't drag us out. You know, it is what the book does. So like it's not like they had to make this crucial decision to not drag it out. Like just follow the book and like, this is the next scene.
Yes.
But they did. I think it's a credit that they didn't leave us hanging. They didn't do, you know, that thing that shows sometimes do where if only the characters could get together and talk, they'd resolve their stuff. Like they put Dunk and Egg together right in the opening minutes. Egg's wearing his Targaryen outfit. And, you know, he's still a little kid. So he's like, I wasn't trying to lie. And Dunk's like, well, you knew you were doing something wrong because you lied, you know? Man, great acting for both Peter Claffey and Dexter Saul Ansel in this scene and this episode as a whole, but I really love this opening scene.
Yeah, even the small things you see in that scene, between Egg showing how much power he has in this room when he tells the serving boy and the two serving men for House Targaryen to, hey, you guys leave the room. They look at each other and they leave the room because a prince gave the command.
Yeah, totally. It's definitely an interesting reversal of Dunk and Egg's roles, but also not really. I feel like something really interesting that the show is able to do really well, because there's just something about the actors, the visual medium, that's letting it get this across, I feel like, even better than the books, is like, yes, Egg is a prince. He's wise. He, you know, for his age, he has all this power for his age, but he's still a little kid. And Dunk is the person he's been looking up to this whole season. So there's this feeling of like, you know, Egg's back in his element, but he still wants Dunk's approval. Like, Dunk being disappointed in him still, like, it makes him like almost cry in this scene, you know, because like he didn't want to hurt Dunk, but he did.
This is the big bro he doesn't want to let down. And we meet the other big bro, and he's okay with letting him down or doing his own thing at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about him. Darren Targaryen making his official debut, because we have seen him before. But yeah, so Dunk and Egg, great opening scene for them. And then Egg, so one thing I did also like in that scene is Dunk's kind of like, why did you do this? You know, were you trying to play a prank? And Egg basically reveals he was a squire. He was Darren's squire, and Darren is a drunk. So like, there's something pure about that where it's like, Egg really does just want to be someone's squire. It's not just that he was trying to escape his life. Like, he really did want this duty of like helping serve a knight. And the knight he was assigned to, his brother, is just such a poor example that he latched on to the first person who came along, which just happened to be Dunk.
It happened to be an honorable man. So, hey, sometimes you get lucky at life. And he was kind of lucky in that situation. Turns out to be in a not so lucky situation at this moment, at least for Dunk.
Yeah, totally. So speaking of unlucky situations, so Egg in that scene, Dunk is like, what happens to me? And basically, Egg's like, my uncle wants to see you. And he's like, oh, your uncle. You mean the heir to the Iron Throne, that uncle. And yes. Yeah. So then we have this really great scene with Baelor Targaryen, which, again, straight from the book. A lot of the dialogue in this scene, which, like, I feel like a broken record with this show, because, like, I'm saying that about, like, almost every other scene. But, like, it is a testament to how they're navigating their source material. They're still adding plenty. Yes. But the stuff they're choosing to do from the book is basically the entire book. And most of it is just so faithful. Even when they change things, it's hard to tell what they've changed and what they haven't, unless you're really looking at it. So this scene with Baelor, Birdie Carvel playing Baelor, what did you think of this, of the performances, of the way it was staged? Like, I assume you liked it.
Yeah, it was a perfect intimate moment between those two. He, of course, shout out to Dunk defending Egg when he said, hey, spill the wine. And he's like, hey, man, he's not going to spill it. He's a good squire.
And yeah.
And he is, you know, defending him one last time before he has to go out and do all this crazy duty. But the conversation we get between Baelor and Dunk, and Baelor just trying to see, like, hey, how good of a knight are you? Are you ready for the challenges that are going to be ahead? Because you did strike a prince. And you can't do that to the royal family.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Yeah, totally. So I loved that bit with Dunk defending Egg, just that it's like, you know, behind closed doors, like they're going to hash their stuff out. And then here they are in front of the prince and like, Dunk still got Egg's back. Like that was a heartwarming little thing. And Egg kind of pays it back later when he comes and he's like, I'm here to squire for you, like later in the episode. So like they've got each other's backs. But yeah, Baylor, you know, I really like the actor playing him is just so good. Like there's just like a quiet intensity. He comes off as like very, you know, smart and thoughtful, like the way he's approaching the scenes. And like big part of that is just the way Baylor as a character is written, where like he is the crown prince. And here we get to see a Targaryen crown prince who's like a middle-aged man who's been raised for this duty, which I don't know that we've really seen that before, you know, in the Game of Thrones shows. Now that I think about it, like, I feel like Baylor might be like the most experienced heir to the Iron Throne we've ever seen. Like the best, the most qualified. But yeah, I like that he kind of walks the middle line here. Like you said, like you did still strike a prince, like the puppeteers, it was innocent. Well, that was still a dumb move, even in peacetime, is kind of the angle he takes. Do you think he was right to kind of walk that middle line where he's like looking at all the different sides of things?
And that's a good question, because he clearly makes it known that he understands what Prince Arian Brightflame did was wrong. It was a silly thing attacking those puppeteers. But to play the middle line and kind of tell Dunk like, well, hey, it was still silly for them to do the puppets. It was silly for them to show them slaying a dragon, even in this so-called peacetime. But they're just puppets. And I know all art is political by nature of art. You're going to take a side of something or somewhat. But can you truly say for this to be something that a story that's been in the history of Westeros long before House Targaryen is a story that'll be here long after House Targaryen's reign? I think I will say Prince Baylor was wrong in saying that the puppeteers may have been doing something wrong.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I mean, I agree with you, obviously. Like, you know, Baylor does kind of say, when Dunk is like, wouldn't you have done the same thing and hit Arian? And Baylor was like, I might have, but I'm a prince, you know, I can do that. And you're a hedge knight, you're laying hands on the royal family. But it is a tricky thing where it's like, you know, I feel like he kind of has to take this tack more than whether it's actually his opinion or not, you know, that they did anything wrong. It seems like he clearly thinks they didn't, but they did a thing that was easy for someone prickly like Arian to take, you know, excuse with and or exception with. And we've already seen in this episode, in the previous episode, like House Targaryen's power is slipping. Like, you know, Baylor was there when the mob rushed the tourney field and started throwing stones at Arion because he killed that horse. Like he is aware that House Targaryen's power is slipping, and Arion is too. There's another interview with that actor out there where he talks about how Arion is kind of like painfully aware of the fact that House Targaryen's grip on power is slipping. I'm like, he's thinking about it a lot, which almost makes him more interesting to me, because I didn't really read him that way in the book, you know?
Yeah, I never got the feel that it was a true play on power, more of an abuse of power that he was using. But I mean, you know what? That doesn't mean, just because he's evil and vain and cruel, all those things that keep bringing up in this season, doesn't mean he's, you know, not smart, not intelligent, not able to read the room and understand, like, hey, of course we're not as powerful as we were when we had dragons. And this second civil war, the first Blackfyre Rebellion, that even lessened our power. Hey, we won. Shout out to House Targaryen. We're awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's old wounds, you know, they heal slow. You still have scars at the end of the day. And
yeah,
I think they still have a lot of scars on their house that he, even his evilness as a prince, can obviously see.
Yeah, I feel like Arion, like, I expected, you know, I wrote an article about this before the season aired, that like he would be the next like love to hate villain of Game of Thrones. Like, and I feel like that's the way he's kind of presented in the novella. Like, that is the archetype he's filling, like the loathsome prince who does loathsome things against our honorable characters like Dunk. But I almost feel like worse for Arion than I expected from the show, just in terms of, like, I don't know. He's a little bit more tragic to me than, like, you know, like a Joffrey or like a Viserys Targaryen, like, because there's something interesting about him as, like, you know, the second son of the kid who's farthest from the line of succession. So he's way down the line of succession, but being smart enough to be a prince, you know, in terms of, I really like, there's a bit in the next scene where he brings up the trial of seven, where his dad doesn't even know what he's talking about. Maekar's like, what the fuck is the trial of seven? Like, I love that. I thought that's a great touch, because it shows, and that is from the book. I don't think Maekar's reaction is from the book, but Arion bringing it up is.
Yes.
And like that, it just kind of shows like Maekar is a more practical, like practically minded prince who's like, he's nowhere near the throne. Like, he's focused on what's in front of him. And Arion is thinking, you know, in the broader sense of like what maybe the House Targaryen is losing in a way, and, you know, mulling that in a way that the show plays it in a way I didn't expect. That almost makes me like, I don't want to say I feel bad for Arion the monstrous, but I almost do.
I don't feel bad for him at all.
He sucks. Don't get me wrong.
And that's a good segue into the next scene, where we see Sir Duncan the Tall introduced, in front of everyone, say, you know what? I want to trial by combat. I want to defend myself with my arms. And I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. Kudos to you. And like you said, Prince Arion's like, what about a trial by seven? Well, what if I have other people come and help me defend myself?
Yeah.
And I think it was smart the way they used Maekar to be like, oh, hey, what the fuck's a trial by seven? So they can kind of explain it to the audience. So if you don't know, everyone's caught up. But I do, just one thing I love from that scene was the power dynamics going on with the walnuts.
Yeah.
He's cracking them the whole time. One flies to the other side of the table. And the fact that he told Lord Ashford, who's house this is, whose castle this is, to pick up that nut and hand it back to him, and he's down there searching for it. Wild. I don't know why you would do that. I would just wait till this situation is over if I do that in my own castle. But I think, in my opinion, and also in that scene where Dunk got it wrong, was he was, when he announced it, I'm not sure he could have changed Prince Arion's mind. But maybe, I don't know if you think this, if he placated a little bit to him and say, like, hey, maybe we can move past this a little bit and figure out another way to make amends that doesn't involve me losing a hand and a foot. Do you think that maybe could have worked with the influence of his father and his uncle there?
No, I don't think so. Because, so, like, there's also Darren in the mix, who's not in that scene, but by this point, Darren had also given the account of some giant robber knight came and kidnapped Egg, and I pursued him and couldn't find him, when, like, he's clearly, you know, we know he's lying to save face. Darren knows he's lying to save face. Who knows if Maekar even thinks he's lying, but, like, that's the lie he told. Arion's running with it, you know, in this scene. He kind of uses it as his excuse. I like the back and forth with Maekar here where, you know, Arion pitches this thing, this trial of seven. We got seven champions on each side. And this way it's not just Arion fighting Dunk, which is, you know, could really go either way. You know, it's not, Arion has never seen Dunk fight. Dunk has never, he saw Arion joust, but like Dunk's a big guy. Like, you know, it's kind of like with Gregor Clegane in Game of Thrones. It's like, all it takes is one bad move with an opponent that big and you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And like Maekar kind of leans over and he's like, are you afraid to fight this hedge knight? Like, is that why you're doing this? And Arion's like, well, Daeron has a claim too. It's not fair for me to just do the trial by combat because then we're not settling both claims. And like, you know, it's nonsense. And Maekar knows it's nonsense. Everybody in the room knows it's nonsense. So I feel like that kind of shows Arion's commitment to just stirring things up. You know, he wanted Dunk beheaded in the first place. So I don't know what amends Dunk could have made. And Dunk is honorable enough that I don't know, you know, it's not like he's groveling or anything for his life. He did the thing he thinks a knight should do, which is just honored his oath. You know, like, don't all knights swear the same oath to protect the innocent? So do you think that he could have convinced, he could have talked Arion down?
He might have could have talked. I want to say he probably could have talked him to a 101, but I think deep down I know that probably wasn't going to happen. And, yeah. And I guess it makes me ask another question. When Daeron the Drunkard came up with his story, had Egg already revealed himself, or did he come up with a story, then it turned out to actually be a little true, and now he has to, he's like, well, I'm stuck with it now. Because he can't go back and say he lied at this. I understand why he can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, that is a fair question because they went looking for Daeron in this episode. That's why Maekar wasn't around in the last episode, in episode 3, because he took some soldiers and he went to scour the countryside for Daeron. Presumably he found him. So that is, I would guess that Daeron probably gave his account before they got back to Ashford.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't really thought about, but yeah, that kind of is awful luck then, I guess. He gives this account, you know, not knowing that Egg has revealed himself, that Dunk is there or any of this. And then they get there and they have this dude in the prison cell already and Egg has revealed himself. That's just Darren's luck right there.
Yeah. That's what happens when you dream too hard. Oh,
yeah. But yeah, the power dynamic, you know, the thing with the walnuts, that is another interesting kind of sign of the pettiness, you know, the area, like the insecurity he maybe feels, you know, someone who's really comfortable in their power in that situation. Like, you couldn't picture Baelor doing that. You couldn't even picture Maekar doing that unless he was like pissed at someone and like making a specific point. But like, there's a casual cruelty to the way Arion's just like, oh, you're the lord of this castle. Like, pick my stuff up off the floor that I don't even want. Yeah.
How many times does he really get to be this powerful when he is at King's Landing or at Summer Hall? He holds all the power here. What he says, he can either make this all go away like this or go through with it and fight to the death because he broke a puppeteer's finger.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair point. You know, like we said, Arion is kind of far down the line of succession. Here he is the center of attention. He has caused this whole debacle. Like you said, he could snap his fingers and it would go away. We clearly see he likes that kind of power in this episode. So, of course, he doesn't make it go away. He makes Dunk find six other people, and Dunk is like, I don't know anyone. it's like, well, if your cause is just, you'll find people. So, yeah, it's a good runway into the episode. And this episode is kind of a bridge between the two high points of the season, almost, you know, without spoiling anything for episode 5. George R.R. Martin already said, like, that is the joust. So this episode ends setting up the Trial of Seven. The Trial of Seven will be next week.
And we see it in all the trailers. We've totally already seen the start of it.
Totally, totally. So that's next week. Egg's reveal was last week. This episode gets us from one to the other. And yeah, after he's done with all the Targaryen stuff, Dunk goes outside and starts venting to his horses, and then Raymond Fosaway comes up and it's like, hey, can I come back to my tent? Let's hang out. Come eat something.
Yeah, your best buddy. New best buddy.
New best buddy. Love seeing Raymond Fosaway. I feel like they've made him really likable. They've done a good job with him.
Yeah. I can see how they why they are quick friends from Raymond's side and from Dunk's side. They really like hit it off. Like, hey, Dunk was just a squire a few days ago. This totally. Guy still is a squire.
Yeah.
Let's go.
But then we get our, you know, so Raymond's cousin Stefan Fosaway is there as well, and he's just like, I'm for you, I'll fight for you.
Great speech.
But he's so full of it, as we find out by the end when he stabs Dunk in the back. I don't know how we want to talk about the Stefan Fosaway of it all. If we want to talk about it later, you want to talk about it now, you have any thoughts on Stefan?
He didn't even try to get anybody. He was supposed to go find people for Dunk's side. Like, they're all like, what do you mean, Sir Stefan? Nobody came and got me except your squire. And like, he immediately went to the other side and tried to figure out what can you offer me? And he got a better offer from them.
Yeah, totally. And you know, there's a line, we'll hop around a little bit, but there's a line there with Lionel Baratheon where Dunk is like, oh, you came, Sir Stefan got you. And Lionel Baratheon's like, who is Sir Stefan? You know, it was your boy Egg got me. And like, Stefan Fosaway said, like, I'm friends with Lionel Baratheon and Daemon Lannister. And like, he's full of it. That like, he's lying on all fronts here, because Lionel doesn't even know who this dude is. He does know who Dunk is, though, you know, enough that when Egg comes, he's like, yeah, I'll fight for the Hedge Knight. So yeah, Stefan Fosaway is kind of like the big betrayal of this story of the Hedge Knight, and he it feels like a classic little Game of Thrones thing of, yeah, I'll help you, you know, it's like Littlefinger with Ned, sure, I'll help you, and then they get there and it's like, psych, I'm gonna help the people who want to kill you.
Yes. So we lost one potential person, but I guess later in that scene where they're in the site in the Fosaway tent, we get Egg popping back up wearing his hood and all his Targaryen garb, and we get Daeron Targaryen, Daeron the drunkard, showing up.
Yeah, totally. Played by Henry Ashton, Daeron. So we did see him at the start of this season. Now, if you are a show only watcher and you did not know what the deal was with that rando yelling at Dunk in the inn, now you know that was Daeron. He had a dream about Dunk with a dead dragon, and he said, yo, get away from me, I dreamed about you, I'm gonna go back upstairs and sleep and pretend you're not here. Now we get to actually meet him. So what was your impression of Daeron? What did you think of this new Targaryen we get this episode?
I thought he was truly the drunk they made him out to be, constantly asking for a drink. He even had like a sheen across his skin. Like, he was like, man, I can really use a drink right now to kind of help me make it through the day. But then it's almost sad because he does talk about the dreams he does have. He like Targaryen dreamers before him, the dreams he's have are real. And at this point in the Targaryen history, you know, the further they've kind of been removed from Valyria, they lose a little bit more of their customs, of their beliefs. And at this point, there's probably no one who's like, you say, I'm dreaming of stuff. Who do you talk to about that? They're so far removed from the dragons, from being back in their homeland, that I think they kind of lost the magic sauce to kind of understand all the things going on with their bloodline.
Yeah, totally.
And you got the best way he can do to cope with it is to drink, and that, you know, most likely has affected him throughout his whole entire life.
Yeah, totally. I mean, so Daeron's another character I like. I feel like there's something about the actors embodying these characters that is making me like some of them just so much more than I like them in the book, because I like Daeron, but Henry Ashton really brings him to life in a way that, like, he feels like the same sort of tragic, drunk sort of character. Like, he could hang with Tyrion Lannister. There's a moment where he's like, they're outside the tent and he apologizes to Dunk, and the apology is like the most like, sorry, dude. You know, like, he's sorry, but he knows it doesn't matter. And, like, just the way that he plays that is so good. But, yeah, your point about the lineage is a great one. Because in House of the Dragon, we had, obviously, Viserys had, I think, one prophetic dream. I don't even remember what it was about, honestly.
About a prince.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. It was about the White City, like the new city and a prince. And that's why he was building all this craziness.
Yeah, I don't even remember, because he was obsessed with Aegon's dream. Aegon the Conqueror had the dream about a Targaryen uniting the Seven Kingdoms to fight the White Walkers. And Viserys had like a single prophetic dream and then no more. And then, like, I don't know off the top of my head if there even were any other dreamers after Viserys before Daeron. Like, it's a very rare talent for House Targaryen. And that was like 100 years ago or 80 years ago, whatever. So yeah, you're right. Like, he's got nobody. And like, we've seen Maekar is not the most nurturing of fathers. So we can assume he's probably not really helping Daeron out with this burden very much.
No.
Yeah, he's, you know, I said I felt bad for Arion, and that shocked me. But Daeron, I actually do feel bad for, and I think you're kind of supposed to. Like,
yeah,
you know, he's like, I'll just fall over. I don't even want to fight you. I have to.
Yeah, I appreciate him saying that. Like, hey, man, don't worry about me in this joust. As soon as I get touched anywhere, I'm gonna fall off the horse. Don't worry, fighter down. Hopefully, nobody come and hit me. I'm gonna lay there.
Yeah, totally. And Egg, of course, in that scene, or in the scene before that, or, you know, the tent, whatever, he's like, I can bring people. And this is, again, the shifting kind of dynamic with Duncan Egg, where now that it's out, he's a prince. He's like, yo, let me be a prince. Let me help you, because now I can. And now, you know, I'm a prince, so we can be honest about this. And also, like, I just gotta say, I love the way Dunk's face like lit up when Egg came into the tent. He's like, I came to squire for you, sir. And like, you can just tell it meant so much to him. Yeah, just, I mean, every scene this, I don't think there's a single bad scene this episode.
See, not, but it does make me question you, because you said you feel bad for Prince Arion.
Little bit. like, tiniest bit.
Because what Egg says in the tent about how his brother had threatened him, I'm like, you don't remember God. That?
Okay, no, that's fair. Arion is a monster. He's awful. He's terrible. But I think what the show is doing that's interesting to me is it's making him a monster who was made, instead of just he's a Targaryen and he's mad, which is kind of the angle that the novella takes, which is kind of the way that the Targaryens are so often talked about. They're mad or they're not, you know. But then with someone like Daenerys, like, maybe she had a streak of madness, but like, she got made into the sort of monster she was by the end of the show, I think, through like horror after horror after horror for her entire life. So it's hard to tell, like, would she have been better if she didn't have to deal with all that stuff? And Arion is obviously a lot more privileged than Daenerys. He obviously has dealt with a lot less than Daenerys. He is awful. The stuff he said to Egg, you're right. He's terrible. He killed Egg's cat. He threatened to cut his, you know, his private parts, whatever. Like, Arion, he's the worst character in this series. But I do think, yeah, they're making him, I want to know how he got that way, which I didn't feel from the book. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. And you could say, I think it also, you can kind of reference Septim Maribal in the main series of books when he brings up some men snap in their first battle, some men snap in their 100th battle. You never know when it could happen. You could luck out. So maybe it was one crazy thing happened to Arion that turns him to the monster he was. In terms of Daenerys, it took so many things that I understand how she could end up being the Mad Queen in the television show based on everything that happened to her. But it took so much. Like, but you never know. It could be that one single thing can do it. You end up like a bright flame over here.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, we see that Daeron is not, he's not a monster, but he's not a good role model for Egg either. So, you know, and then the other brother, Aemon, who would be a great role model, he went off to the Citadel, where he'll presumably be far away from all this nonsense. So it is interesting. Like, I do want to know, like, what kind of father is Maekar? Like, what's their situation like at home? that half these brothers are messed up. One went away to the Citadel, and then the youngest is like running off to go live, you know, in the hedges with this knight. Like, yeah, it's interesting stuff.
Yeah, that has to be crazy for Aemon being over at the Citadel and then hearing all this that happened. Like, what do you mean a trial by seven's about to happen?
Yeah, totally. And there's a cool line in this episode that it's the first trial of seven in like 100 years. So like, I had to look this up because I was like, what was the trial of seven before this? Do you know the answer to this?
Yes, Maegar the Innocent or Maegar the Cruel. I spend 30 minutes defending him, but I'm not going to do that now. That's an awesome trial by seven to read in Fire and Blood. So if you haven't, if you've never read it, read that one. And what's his name? Is it Dick Bean? Shout out to Dick Bean.
Yep, Dick Bean, who comes to Maegor's aid. Yeah, so Maegar the Cruel or the Innocent, which like this is a hot take. I need to know more about why Maegar is the Innocent here. But yeah, Maegar, as everyone knows him, Maegar the Cruel, he did a trial of seven to become king, essentially, against the Faith Militant, which was, you know, we saw them come back in Game of Thrones. It's the High Sparrow and all that stuff. And that and Dunk are really the only two recorded instances of a trial of seven, like in the history of Westeros, which gives you an idea of how obscure of a method of solving anything this is that Arianne decided to go back on. We do get a reference to it in A Song of Ice and Fire with Cersei, who is, you know, trapped by the Faith Militant. But we haven't seen one in the books. We don't know if it will resolve that way or if she'll just blow up the sept or something like she did in the show.
I mean, I just want to talk real quick about how crazy a trial by seven is. To say I'm going to get six other people and they're going to have a 7v7 to decide this. What if you get six people that can't fight? Or they're the only people you can get? And now...
Your cause wasn't righteous.
Yeah.
It's definitely, you know, obviously the whole trial by combat thing is not the most, you know, legally rigorous way of deciding someone's guilt. I think it's a good touch. It's a good bit of world building for Westeros. Like it always has been. It's kind of like it deeply rooted in the series. You know, it goes back to the very first book, where Tyrion and Bronn do one for him in the Eyrie, and it's like, oh, this is a thing that happens here. When the system is so rigged against someone, they have this last recourse to say, I want to fight to prove that I'm innocent, and the gods will show if I'm not. But yeah, having that be 7v7, you know, there are so many, we can talk more about the way that this one goes down next week.
Yeah.
But there are, you know, some things afoot that make it not just a seven people testing their martial prowess one against each other. It's interesting. It's definitely it's a choice Arianne made, I guess we can say.
It is a choice, but lucky for us, Dunk seems to be ready for the opportunity. He's got his shield from Steely Pate. He went there and visited him.
Yeah. What did you think of the Steely Pate stuff this episode?
I think the sigil was awesome. I know it's kind of a little departure from the books. I know in the books he gets the shield and then there's like a crowd of people out there cheering him on because he's a knight that didn't forget his vows, but still a good scene between those two. Them totally. bringing that old adage, what was it, oak and iron guard me well.
Or else I'll die and I'm doomed to hell, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I love that they had that exact, you know, line that Dunk kind of repeats to himself after that.
100%, because at that point you see the look on Dunk's face, like he's like, I don't know if I can do this. This is gonna be crazy. I'm gonna die. Like this is madness. I'm gonna die. How the heck am I even supposed to do this? But you have people in your corner, like Steely Pate, like Tansel Tootall, even though she did have to leave, which is completely understandable.
Yeah.
You don't want to be there, no matter if you win or lose, how they're going to react to the puppeteers still being there.
Dangerous for her to stay. Yeah. Mm. I'm sad to see her. I feel like that's a, you know, like this isn't too big of a spoiler, but like, I wouldn't expect to see Tansel again. In the book, we don't ever see her again in the Hedge Knight after this point. And it does feel like a little bit of a, you know, reversal on the usual tropes of like a knight getting falling for someone and he comes to their defense, and then do they get any sort of happy resolution? Like, not in this world. She peaced out, because who knows what would have happened if she had stayed.
100%. So I do not blame her, but we see Dunk has Uncle his Dunk. Shield. Uncle Dunk. but he has his shield. He has his new armor, his cool helmet, and we see him ready to go. And he has a squire armoring him up.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, all of the, you know, the setup for this, I think, worked really well. Obviously, the episode ends with him getting to the field for the Trial of Seven. There's kind of an almost abrupt cut where it's like you see him watching them set it up at night, and then boom, it's the following morning. He probably hasn't slept at all. Why would you? It could be your last night alive. There's an interesting thing, too, with Dunk. You know, you just said, like, with Steely Pate, he had that moment where it's like, I'm gonna die. Like, what am I doing? But he's in a different position than we usually see people in Game of Thrones when they do trial by combats, because most that I can remember of the Game of Thrones trial by combats were like, most of them revolved around Tyrion. Like, Tyrion's not fighting for himself. So it became a whole thing of who can he get to be his champion. There's something different about it being Dunk, who is at this tournament to fight. You know, he's here to joust. He's here to do everything. He's a knight, so he's a fighter. He's not a Tyrion. And, like, this just happens to be the way he has to do it. Like, now's your chance to prove yourself. He's better equipped for something like this than people usually are in these shows for trial by combats. And I think he faces it a little more bravely because of that.
Yeah, I think he's as ready as you can be. He went from one day, like, hey, tomorrow I'm gonna fight in the joust, to I guess tomorrow I'm really finna fight in the joust. So
yeah,
it was all prophetic. He was always gonna fight. The face of the gods made sure of it.
Yeah, and this is, you know, this is a fun little fake out. He doesn't get to actually compete. Instead, he's fighting for his life in this thing. But yeah,
that'll make you fight harder. If you're going to fight for something.
That's true. So, yeah, he gets to the field in the morning. And surprise, surprise, there are a bunch of knights there who want to fight for him. And he, like we said, he thinks it was because of Sir Stefan. It was not because Sir Stefan sucks. It was because of Egg. And the people on Dunk's team that are there waiting for him are Sir Humphrey Harding, who is the knight that Arion killed his horse. He has a broken leg. He's just strapped into the saddle and he wants to get even. Humphrey Beesbury. Well, actually, we got like a line about who Humphrey Beesbury is, because it's like, I had to look back. I was like, who even was that other knight? You know, they didn't give him a single word or a single bit of explanation.
No, they gave him a cool mustache though. And that almost counts the same.
And the armor's nice. It's got some little beehives on it.
Yeah. And then we got, was it Sir Riswell or Risling?
Robin Risling. Yeah.
Maddest knight of them all.
Yep. And he's just a religious fanatic. So he's like, you want to do a holy trial by combat with seven people on each side, like the gods? Yes, I will do that.
Sure thing.
Yeah. And then Lionel Baratheon, who's just like, I can't miss the chance to get the Kingsguard's white dresses dirty. You know, so it's a good team for Duncan. Then Sir Stefan totally stabs him in the back because Arion promised him a lordship if they defeat Dunk, which I guess that means Stefan was not already in line for a lordship.
Yeah, that must be what it means. So he must be far down on the Apple Cider Boys line of succession. So, hey, if you can get some land, maybe a small keep, to add to the reach or wherever he can get it, it's a good gamble on his part.
I guess, yeah. If you're willing to throw your honor away, which, you know, like he has kind of a classic sort of Game of Thrones attitude of people have thrown their honor away for far less. This is a good deal.
And it is the one thing I can't begrudge in him. That is a good deal he's getting. I understand how he got there. I don't like it, but I completely understand.
Yeah, but Raymond Fossaway, his squire, does not. He pushes him away, and he insists on getting knighted right there so that he can fight on Dunk's team, which is pretty brave of him. to be like, yeah, I will dive into this mortal battle for you, right? You know?
Crazy whiplash. You went from 30 seconds ago, I'm finna help equip my cousin to fight to the death, to, oh, I'm gonna fight to the death and potentially have to fight my older cousin who I was just a squire for.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I really like this progression for Raymond. There's some lore we're going to talk about after the finale of what this means for House Fossaway, because there's a cool little bit of Westeros lore that this is going to explain. But yeah, I really liked, you know, the show is done good by the Fossaways. I think they've really had good story stuff.
Yeah, and we got to see our second knighting ever in a Game of Thrones universe on the small screen.
Wow, is that right? It's really only the second time. Brienne was the only one.
I want to say she was the only one that we saw get knighted. I'm trying to go back in my memory. I'm like, who else?
Yeah, they cut Kristen's. They did film one for Kristen Cole in House of the Dragon.
Oh,
but they cut it. There have been some like deleted scenes, pictures, but that was like him being named to the Kingsguard. I don't think that was him being knighted the first time, but they did a similar sort of ceremony and then they canned it, unfortunately. So
release the hot D cut.
Right? Yeah. The first season of that show had a lot of deleted scenes that like we're just never gonna see. There was a scene of Rhaenyra helping Alicent into her wedding dress to marry Viserys. Like, yeah. But yeah, anyway, so Raymond gets knighted. Dunk does not have to knight him. There's a moment where he wants Dunk to do it and Dunk kind of waffles. And then he's called to the field by Lord Ashford. So Lionel Baratheon does it. I really like the overlay of Lionel knighting Raymond and talking about the vows of a knight while Dunk is riding up to the box to kind of talk about starting the trial by combat. But he's only got six people on his side, which means he would have to forfeit, which leads into what I'm just going to assume is probably one of both of our favorite scenes of this episode.
Yes. Maybe I got to yell it again. Are there no true knights among you?
Yeah. So good. I feel like this was Peter Claffey's money scene. Like he's got lots of good ones and funny ones, but like this scene is going to be one when I think back on this show that I think back on his whole speech to the crowd.
Yeah, because Lord Ashford gave Dunk one more opportunity because he's still one short and he's pleading to all these lords and knights. Can one of you please come down here and help me stay alive for a little bit longer? Can you fight for my side? My cause is just. Oh, why aren't you? You should be willing and able to come and fight for the seven, fight for what's right.
Yeah.
And when you start to hear that music swell and you see someone stand up in the crowd and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is different from what happened in the books. What's happening right now? And we get a fart scene. they had to throw in one more joke for us. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
All right, at Night of the Seven Kingdoms. Yeah, they love faking out. And I feel like this show more than either of the other two. You know, Game of Thrones has been around in the popular culture for a while. They're having a blast just playing with the expectations. Where it's like, you know, this is not the first time they've gotten us with a big musical swell. And then there's some bathroom humor instead of, you know, the thing we expected. Yeah, I like that it subverted its own subversion here because that happens and it's like, damn it, they got me again. And then the gate opens to the tourney ground and who rides in but Baelor Targaryen and the Game of Thrones music drops.
Yes.
How did you feel about that end stinger and about hearing the theme music again?
Yeah, that was a perfect use of it. We got the Prince of the Iron Throne coming out wearing his son's armor, ready to go out there and fight for what he thinks is a just cause. Like, hey, he put his money where his mouth was and said, hey, I got your back, Dunk. Let's go out here. Let's go win. And you see the look on Makar's face. He's like, what are you doing, brother? Like, this man hurt my sons. Like, he violated all three of them, essentially.
Yeah, totally. Man, it's a tricky situation with Baelor and Makar. Like, I don't blame Makar for being like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you're gonna fight against us? Like, this is to the death here.
Yeah,
and you're gonna fight against me and two of my sons after this hedge knight. You know, like you said, he spoiled, he ruined, he hit, you know, one of them and did all this stuff. But Baylor, like you said, Dunk in his eyes is innocent. He did the thing all true knights must, which is defend the innocent.
And if you're a maker, like, how embarrassing can that be? It's like, what do you mean my older brother, who's always been ahead of me, always gotten everything, always been the most beloved, again, you're going to stand against me in this small instance? Well, not really. So a small thing that happened that is blowing over to a big thing, but you're going to be against me right now. I know he had to be so pissed. And what I wonder what Prince Arion was thinking, like,
yeah,
like, uncle, what are you doing? This is not how it's supposed to go.
Yeah, totally. You know, you can tell that I think there's a reaction shot with Arion, and he's obviously not happy about it. Like, you know, and there's Baylor is a really honorable, heroic Targaryen. He's obviously very brave, but there is this interesting thing of like, what does this do to their family that he is making this choice to step in? And like, you know, if anyone else could have, would it have made a difference? Like, you know, would he have done it if Dunk had a seventh option? Probably not. But if it's a matter of Dunk's, you know, being summarily executed just on a technicality, he's just going to step in. And yeah, we will see how that plays out in the next episode. Obviously, there's a whole lot of build up for episode 5, which will continue the vaunted Game of Thrones tradition of being the big, insane, crazy action episode for the penultimate episode.
Yes, we got to see a little bit of jousting in all the episodes leading up to this, and now those were just, you know, play joust. Well, not play jousting, but it's a turn. It's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
Now we get to see a joust where it is to the death, last man standing wins, kind of.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, without getting into too deep of spoilers here, I think we can, just looking at who's on the field, we could talk about this a tiny bit. So we talked about Dunk's team for the joust. Arion's team is Arion, Daron, Maekar, three knights of the Kingsguard, and Sir Stefan. So these, Baylor has also put these Kingsguard knights in a really awkward situation because they're sworn to protect the whole royal family. So that's Maekar, Arion, Daron. They're also sworn to protect Baelor. So how are they going to navigate this in the trial by combat?
Yeah, because we'll in a tourney joust, that's one thing. In a fight to potential death, a real fight, like, what are we supposed to do now?
Yeah, totally. So yeah, we'll see how that plays out next week. You have any closing thoughts on this episode? We have talked, as we always do, almost twice the length of the episode about the episode.
Yeah.
You have any more thoughts about the episode before we start winding down here?
You know what? I just love the fact that in each episode, we get a little bit, we keep having to ask ourselves, what makes a true knight? How is it just being honorable? Is it just telling the truth? Like, what is the sauce that makes a true knight? And I think my man Dunk got it. Whatever it is, he got it. He's not worried about doing what should be done for the nobility. It's about doing what's right. And we keep seeing him do that over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think the show has dug into that theme really well, where Dunk's not, he's not thinking 10 steps ahead. He's not Jaime Lannister, who's making the heart-wrenching decision of, do I kill my king or let 500,000 people be burned alive? Like, he's just in small stakes situations that have now become larger stakes solely by virtue of who's involved in them. And he's just, here's someone who's being hurt, who doesn't deserve it. I'm going to step in and I can stop that here right now and help that situation immediately. So yeah, I agree with you. I think Dunk's got the sauce to be a true knight. I think, you know, from where he started, which was taking Sir Arlen of Pennytree's stuff and burying him and saying, I guess I'll go be a knight. I could be a gold cloak. I guess I'll be a knight. to here, where we see he's surrounded by all these other knights, including some like Sir Stefan, who shows he clearly does not have what it takes to be a good knight. And Dunk is stepping up. He's proven he's got what it takes. So we'll see if that's enough for him.
Yes.
Next week.
Next week on A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yes, yes. Which will be back at its normal time, Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO and HBO Max. And this podcast will also be back on its normal time on Sunday night, right after it airs. So, yeah, tune in. It's gonna be a banger next week. We're gonna have a lot to talk about.
Yes. Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah. As we wind down here, one last shout out for the road. Is there anything else you are watching or reading that you want to call out here at the end?
You know what? I just started reading Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Did you? How is it? I've heard so many good things about that series.
I'm about 100 or so pages in, and I will say this. It's not going to mean anything to you if you haven't read it. I'm not going to spoil anything.
Okay.
I wasn't the biggest fan of Donut, but I may be coming around. I'll say that.
All right. So I know who Donut is.
Okay.
All right. Isn't Donut is Donut the cat?
Donut is the cat.
Okay. Yeah.
And I didn't know
Donut is a fan favorite.
So. My wife just read the book. And so she was like, you got to at least try it. And I said, okay, I'll read 50 pages and see what happens. I'm still going.
Nice. Nice. Well, I am really curious to see what you think of that when you finish. That's one of those series I'm like, man, I know I got to read this. I just haven't gotten into it yet. But yeah.
There's a lot of books written. So I'm like, I'll read this first one and then I'll see if I come back around. I know she's already almost done with the second book now, so good, shout out to
nice.
Her
nice.
But what about you, anything reading or watching anything good?
Yeah, so I just started reading last week Isles of the Ember Dark, which is the new Brandon Sanderson book, like quotes new. It was his secret project for his last crowdfunding campaign, and this the crowdfunding version of it he delivered to people last fall. But the tour books, like wider release one from a traditional publisher, came out this week. And it's pretty good. Like the secret projects have been kind of hit and miss, where some of them he just experimented and it's like, all right, dude, you really went off here. Like, I'm glad you got to do it, but this is the sort of thing you never would have done, you know, for one of your normal book releases.
Yeah.
This one doesn't feel like that. It's like, this could have been a normal book as part of his regular Cosmere plan. It expands on a novella he wrote years ago called Six of the Dusk, and it's basically like Cosmere Moana. You know, this older trapper, he has to go on this sea voyage looking for the origin of his people through this dark dimension that leads to other planets, essentially. And there are magical parrots. So I described this to my wife last night. I was like, I'm reading this book. Here's what it's like right now. And I got done. I was like, that sounded friggin' ridiculous, but I promise it's a good time.
Magical parrots. I just rewatched Rio. So I'm down for the parrots and the birds. Okay. I got you.
Yeah. I feel like, so I don't know if you know this, Brandon Sanderson is a parrot guy.
Oh.
He has a parrot. He's brought it on live streams with him. So I feel like this was his, I love parrots. I'm going to make the parrots one of the magical protagonists of a book.
They will be here.
I will get some parrot representation because we don't get enough in fantasy. Let me give these parrots their time to shine. But yeah, it's good so far. I'm only like a quarter of the way in, but really enjoying it.
All right, great. We both got some new reads coming. I like it.
Yeah, same. But all right, I guess, are we ready to hit the road?
I gotta hit the road so I can prepare myself mentally for next week's episode.
Nice. Yes. Well, for all of you out there watching, listening, consuming this podcast in whatever form you are, this has been Take the Black. I'm Daniel Roman. This is Mark Nettles. And find us online, winteriscoming.net, House of Nettles. And tune in next week for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Like, subscribe, find us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is back Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO and HBO Max. And this show airs right after. So until then, keep an eye out for any True Knights nearby. We'll see you next week.